Case is Norgren Incorporated versus the ITC and SMC Corporation, 2011-13-49. This is
Mantai.
Mantai.
Before I start, there's a box or perhaps two boxes of exhibits that the ITC had delivered, and I wanted to use some of the items to demonstrate some points.
I think all of us may have seen them.
They're right here. As Reggie wants to get them.
You wish to use them? I'm with us as long as I think.
I think we both asked for some, so I assume that they will use them as well.
You're not going to flow any water through them.
Compressed air, Your Honor. If I have a second, it looks
boxes
like...
Boxes are open.
Are they open?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I think you should generally put away your pocket knife. It's probably not a good idea to bring it into the courtroom in general.
Okay,
all
right. It's an analogy.
Okay.
Can I leave it out? I might have to undo something.
Sure.
One of the problems with exhibits is that they take a lot of time, and the benefit to time ratio is often not a good one, but please proceed.
All right, I'm ready. In 2007, we had the first of two trials in this case that involved, at least in part, the issue of obviousness. In that case, the ALJ found that the patent, the 392 patent, was not obvious. But part of its decision also had to do with the claim construction of the term flange. And that's why I wanted to show you these items. This is the SMC, the alleged infringing flange. And this was found by a panel of this court to be generally rectangular, generally rectangular ported flange.
Rectangular.
Well, yes.
Not the whole flange, the front face surface, right there. Yes.
The surface.
Not the whole thing in your hand.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm trying to,
yes.
Yeah, it's this right here. And in the same opinion, they were talking about Norgren's edition of the same thing, and there was a picture of this as well in that opinion saying that this is also. Okay. The case was sent back to the ITC for a...
Just out of curiosity, did that prior opinion find that they were generally rectangular or say it is undisputed that the accused structures are generally rectangular?
Well, it actually found... It redefined general rectangular and said that general rectangular did not have to have four projecting rims as the Norgren flange has, the four projecting rims on the flange, that this flange, which only has the two projecting rims on these two sides.
The mounting ears, I remember.
Mounting ears, correct, Your Honor. That also was generally rectangular.
We said it was generally rectangular because it was undisputed whether it was rectangular. I just remembered working through whether there were two or four required. But anyway, go ahead and continue.
All right. But in the ID by the ALJ, it was found that the patent itself was non-obvious, and there were several factors that had not a thing to do with the flange. The prior opinion of this court, in other words, was irrelevant to most of the findings. In that finding, which was upheld by the ITC, it did not review the finding of the ALJ. He said that there was insufficient evidence of how to integrate a pivoting side. Now, this is Norgren's edition of its own patent. In other words, here's the pivoting side. There was insufficient evidence of how to integrate a pivoting side into a rectangular clamp. There was insufficient evidence about the choices of how to solve the two problems of loose parts and easy replacements. There was insufficient evidence of how the choice was made. There was insufficient evidence of expectations of success. And most importantly, according to the ALJ and passed by the ITC, there was no evidence of why to choose a rectangular clamp with a pivoting side as opposed to all other possible choices. That was the opinion of the ITC in 2008. We had another trial in 2010. In that trial, basically the same evidence was presented by the challengers as to obviousness, but there was one change as to the presentation from Norgren. We presented a witness named John Wolfe. John Wolfe may have been the perfect witness to opine upon what a person of ordinary skill in the art, in the industry of FRLs, which are what these units are called, would have thought was obvious in 1993, the date of the invention.
What was the prior art? Wasn't it an old SMC connector with a rectangular flange?
This is the prior art. I would point out, this is RPX002. I would point out that this is a bracket over here where my hand is. So the actual clamp is the part that you can't see covered by my hand. It's this, the other side of the clamp, and this, which is called a coupling member in the Yamazaki patent.
And isn't the question whether it was obvious to combine a hinge to close this rectangular portion as shown in Palachi?
Well, actually, the witness for SMC and the staff of the ITC said that Palachi basically was irrelevant, that hinges had been around a lot longer than Palachi, like on doors and all kinds of things.
That's even worse.
Well, but I have a point to make about that. There's actually two issues, though. It's not just the adding the pivot. It's also, was this a generally rectangular clamp? And was it four-sided?
Wasn't that settled in an earlier case we had?
No, it was not. In the second case, the ALJ found...
Your position then is that the earlier case simply addressed
the flange
and whether the flange was rectangular and particularly whether there were multiple projections on that flange, but didn't address the shape of the clamp.
Right. In the second go-round, where this became a big issue, the ALJ said this was neither four-sided nor was it rectangular, based on his observation of it, essentially. When it got to the ITC, they looked at the same thing, and they said, oh yeah, that's four-sided and rectangular. So basically, you get to break the tie. You know, which is it? And I would say, you know, the one reason I had these brought here is I think you need to take a look at this and decide, is that four-sided and generally rectangular? I would submit that it isn't, that it has multiple sides, many more than four, that it is not a rectangle, it's some other sort of polygon. And it's the only example of the prior art of a so-called four-sided general rectangular clamp. If you find that that is not a four-sided general rectangular clamp in the sense that the patent says it should be.
What does it matter that it may have more sides than four?
I think it does.
Why is that? I mean, if you know, something that has four sides still has four sides if there are additional sides.
Is an octagon generally rectangular?
No.
Pentagon's not an octagon.
Well, you're saying an octagon, you know, if it's a symmetrical octagon, is it double rectangle? I think what the patent means is, if you look at the examples in the patent.
Wait, so you're saying an octagon is not generally rectangular?
Excuse me?
Did you say an octagon is not generally rectangular?
That's correct.
Okay, hold up the SMC flange that's accused of infringement. The flange, not the clamp, the flange. How is that? Let's see, how many sides does that have, counsel? I want you to look at the front face, the generally rectangular part, and tell me
yeah.
How many sides.
One, two, three,
oh,
four.
No. What about these?
But the rest
isn't
of it?
That has eight sides. Yeah. Why is that not an octagon?
The beveled corners.
Yes. All.
Well, I think it's in the patent. It's generally...
You can't pick it one way or the other.
Well,
you don't get them both.
No, I think that you can have some variation. It's generally rectangular.
Well, doesn't that apply to the clamp as well, that it's generally rectangular? It's certainly there are four sides that have some operative relationship to the clamping that is performed. You've got at least two clamps and you've got two protrusions that cooperate with the flange.
Well,
correct?
It depends on what you're counting. If you're counting everything in there, this is called a coupling member, and these are called striders in the Yamazaki bed. If you're counting all of those, it has at least four sides. I would agree with you there. But I think it has many more. Are you excluding this, this, and these? I mean,
well, but the claim talks about generally rectangular. So
I think at
that,
some point,
that
though,
provides some flexibility, does it not, in how this is examined?
Well, and I think that that's pointed out by this being generally rectangular, is that there is some variation. It has beveled edges. But I don't think that, you know, that this fits within the parameters. I think that goes way outside of it.
As I read the ITC's opinion, though, one of the things that they used to reject Mr. Wolf's testimony was pointing to, I don't know if it's Dr. or Mr. Wiskamp, your earlier expert, and his testimony was that the only difference, if I remember it right, between the prior art and the present thing is the clamp. And that sort of kind of jammed you up a little bit now, because you're pointing out, no, there's another difference. It's the four-sided rectangle difference. But he was your expert, and at the time, didn't he give that testimony?
He gave that testimony in a deposition, but he also said in that same deposition that he was incorrect. He corrected himself later. And when he testified under oath at the trial, he said it was cross-shaped. It was not four-sided and general rectangular. So that's actually a mischaracterization of his testimony. At best, he was impeached.
Mr. Manti, I don't want to clamp down on you. You wanted to save 5 minutes. You can continue to speak or save it.
Okay, I'm already at the five-minute mark. Yes. Okay, let me save it for the rebuttal.
Mr. Reese, for the commission.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court, my name is Mark Reese. I'd like to pick up right where we left off, although rather than fumble with the exhibits, unless you'd like me to, I'll leave them just because it can take a lot of time. I'm sorry, okay. I'd like to address two points, if I may. It's first, this notion of generally rectangular, which I think the Court's questions are pointed in the right direction in terms of what that means and how it's been applied in this case in the past. We've now seen the Norgren clamp, which was found to be generally, or the Norgren flange, which was found to be generally rectangular, which is in fact octagonal. I actually counted the SMC sides, and I get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So I don't know if you call that a hexagonal, which is found to be.
Hexagon 5?
I'm sorry. Six sides.
Six? I can't remember my geometry, and I have a study right now.
And you're better at it than I am. I think it's six sides.
Hexagon would be fine.
Well, as long as you don't start talking about parallel pipettes, because I had to look that one up.
Your Honor, I think in fairness, I think that one's off, and I haven't heard it in the reply.
Well, given that I don't know the difference between a hexagon and a septagon and whatever else, I think. Wow.
Okay. I do think that between the commission's examination of the clamp, the SMC device, which again it's hinged on the wall, so just for terminology, these striders, this is considered the front strider, this is the rear strider, and this is an alignment detail on the top, alignment detail on the bottom. Incidentally, just so the Court is aware, there is a new style clamp which was found infringing, which has the same, it's the exact same functioning that you find in the old style SMC clamp. This one predates the Norgren art by about 10 years.
The one in your right hand that you said you weren't going to fumble with, but aha.
I know, and now I fumble.
Is clearly rectangular. I don't think there's any dispute, really. It doesn't seem to be a dispute among people that is a rectangular.
And the only thing I wanted to point out, Your Honor, is it's the only one that isn't here, is that you mentioned, you may recall, those ears on the flange. And so these were called the wing-like protrusions, which function the same way as the striders do. Those perform the squeezing function.
But regardless of how it
and the alignment.
The question is, what is its shape? Now, that one's clearly rectangular, but why is the other one rectangular?
Well, and it's actually rectangular for the same reason I would submit. The four sides, again, are the front strider, the rear strider, the top alignment detail, and the bottom alignment detail. And the view that one looks at is from the clamp as it functions. The clamp, after all, is designed to engage the flange. And as the court will recall in the Norgren 1 opinion, it looked at the face of the flange to determine whether it was generally rectangular. And it's the face of the clamp, I submit, that dictates the proper view of is it generally rectangular. And you clearly have four sides. And I think the court, one of your honors, pointed out that there's witness testimony on both sides favoring the view that this is a four-sided, generally rectangular clamp. There is Mr. Wiskamp's testimony, which he was forced to concede on cross-examination. And there's also Dr. Trumper, who was the affirmative expert put on by SMC and whom the commission credited.
So you want us to look at it in really just two dimensions and forget about depth. You want us to look at the front face, right? To decide whether it's generally rectangular. That's pretty much what you're arguing, am I right?
Well, I think the proper way is what matters is what engages the flange.
Mm-hmm.
And in that respect, what engages the flange is clear. It's actually entirely exactly like the new style clamp, which is the alignment details prevent
doesn't say a generally rectangular portion of a clamp which engages the flange. Quite the contrary, it says a generally rectangular clamp. Otherwise, it would say the generally rectangular portion that engages the flange. This says the clamp, the whole clamp. So it's not just the portion that engages the flange that has to be generally rectangular, but the whole clamp. So as I see it, if I reduce it to two dimensions, this is kind of my rough drawing of what it looks like. I mean, you know, this is really rough, obviously. It's about, like, my geometry identification skills. But I don't know if that's generally rectangular.
I don't think that's a fair characterization of the clamp, and particularly in light of the Norgren decision and how it was applied to the flanges and what the expert testimony is regarding the flange, and also what the clamp does, which is clamping FRL units by being adapted to engage the flange. So if the flange is four-sided or generally rectangular, what the clamp needs to be is four-sided or generally rectangular to engage the flange. And so I would submit...
Do you not appreciate the claim language? I mean, the claim language says a generally rectangular clamp. It doesn't say the portion of the clamp designed to engage the flange is generally rectangular. It says the whole clamp is generally rectangular.
How do you
carve that up?
I don't mean to carve anything up. I think it's a fair application of the claim language. As it's been construed, and there is no claim construction issue here as to generally rectangular. It's for the same reason that with the flange...
No, you're suggesting the only portion of the clamp that needs to be generally rectangular is the portion that engages the flange. And my question to you is, what in the claim language would justify that? The claim language says the clamp must be generally rectangular, not the limited portion that engages the flange.
In terms of the clamp being adapted to engage the flange, that I'm drawing just right out of claim one, what the clamp performs, the function performs. But if to get to the point about generally rectangular, if it's useful, I would look again at the flange, which is, again, for the flange, the court did not examine from the top or from the back or the side.
Well, the court didn't examine any of it because it wasn't an issue. It was undisputed by the parties that they were all generally rectangular. The opinion says so directly in it. The only issue the court had in front of it was two sides or four sides.
Right. The flange, the issue, was the question about the rims and whether a four-sided flange would require rim on all four sides. And that's what the court obviously disagreed with the commission on. And that was the hinge on the original non-infringement finding. And having found that only two rims were required, the court then found infringement. If I may, too, Your Honor, if this will help Your Honor understand, Norgren's position in this litigation in the first go-round, you may recall, was that the flange itself was four-sided precisely because, or that the new style connector was four-sided because the alignment details on the top and the bottom and the wing light projections form the four sides, and that the alignment details couldn't be ignored. You couldn't call that a two-sided device because these alignment details actually perform a function, which is to hold the flange from twisting. And again, it's the wings perform the squeezing function.
So
Norgren's position today, I would submit, is they would like one claim construction for infringement. They wanted a broader claim construction. They got it. And then now they come in, and having got the claim construction they wanted for infringement, they can't avoid its consequences for validity.
Mr. Reese, your time has expired because you agreed to split with...
Yes, sir.
But Judge Lynn has a question.
Yeah, just very briefly, why shouldn't that clamp be considered generally octagonal and not generally rectangular?
Generally octagonal.
There are eight sides.
Right. Well, again, I get these sides, the intervening slopes, we'll call them, which is a concept that the ALJ introduced into it. They perform no function at all in this clamp. The clamp, it's the two striders, the front and the rear strider, and the alignment details that are what engage the flange, that hold it in place and they clamp it and achieve the clamping function that is, of course, what this case is all about. And so I would submit that it's...
I think you've answered my question.
Okay.
Mr. Reese.
Thank you.
Let's hear from Mr. Neustadt, who has 7 minutes. We will not dock him with the extra minutes Mr. Reese took.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. At the first hearing before the ALJ only found the ALJ only refused to find obvious on the basis of the narrow claim construction which SMC had offered him and which he accepted. The ALJ said, if you're going to have a broader claim construction, my conclusion on obviousness is going to be different, and this court then did adopt that broader claim construction.
But then the ALJ didn't come to a different conclusion. You say the court adopted the broader claim construction, but then the ALJ went on to decide that his finding on obviousness was the same, not different.
Yes, but he used a different reason. He used a completely different reason. The ALJ's decision was a sua sponte decision. This intervening slope sides was never argued by Norgren. Norgren always said that a generally rectangular shape is not defeated by intervening slope sides. And it had to say this. It had to say this to prove domestic industry because its flange had intervening slope sides. It also had to do this to prove infringement because the SMC flange also had that intervening slope sides. So this court did define what generally rectangular was, and it wasn't defeated by intervening slope sides. No one in the first appeal argued intervening slope sides. No one at the second hearing argued intervening slope sides. It wasn't until the ALJ got back to write his decision that he all of a sudden said, sua sponte, I see intervening slope sides. And that was the first time that came up. And so it's in conflict with Norgren's positions, both with respect to domestic industry and with respect to infringement. And it's also contrary to Norgren's position with respect to the clamp, where they said that the clamp is also four-sided, despite the fact that it had intervening slope sides.
So your position is that the so-called intervening slope sides don't really count because they play no function, and therefore aren't really sides.
That's exactly correct. But it's even generally rectangular. When you have something with round corners, if you have a rectangle and you just round some of the corners, well, you could say that's not a perfect rectangle. Well, rather than round the corners, why not just slant it? You still have something that's generally rectangular, and as you see, it has no function whatsoever. What they do is they make it generally rectangular so that it works, so that it clamps the rectangular flange. And I think Your Honor was addressing in the claim...
Yeah, but you would agree an oval is not generally rectangular, right? I mean, these geometric shapes, despite my ineptitude, have names. And an oval would not be generally rectangular, would it?
I think we should have to, the answer to your question is really in the claims. I mean, you can debate as to whether or not something's rectangular or oval, but really what we're talking about here is how things work. And what the claim says, and this is claim one, the only independent claim, it says a four-sided, generally rectangular clamp adopted in its operative position to engage the pair of corded flanges. So what it is saying is that the clamp engages the flanges. And the flange is what is rectangular. So it's the portion of the...
No, the clamp is also rectangular. A rectangular clamp adapted to engage the flanges. So
yes.
why doesn't the clamp have to be rectangular too?
Because the flanges are four-sided.
That's a separate element. A generally rectangular ported flange. That's one element. And the next element is a generally rectangular clamp adapted in its operative clamping position to engage in parallel relationship with one another the pair of ported flanges.
Well, what they're talking about...
So why don't you have a rectangular clamp, flange and a rectangular clamp?
I think you said no when you intended to say yes. The clamp is generally rectangular, isn't it?
Yes. If you go to page 13 of our brief where we have some drawings, so at the top of page 13, or at the bottom of page 13, you can see the two flanges. I mean, this is the same flange.
I guess the problem I have with the way you redlined the top right-hand picture is that you have excluded a portion of the clamp. This is the same argument I had with the ITC attorney a few minutes ago, which is the claim says a rectangular clamp. It does not say the portion of the clamp that engages the flanges must be rectangular, and that's all you've outlined in red. It's the portion of the clamp that engages the flanges as opposed to the entire clamp. That's my problem. You're right. If the red part you outline is the clamp, it's generally rectangular. Problem is that's not the clamp. That's only a portion of the clamp.
Well, speaking about generally rectangular, of course, the case was whether or not the ITC had substantial evidence for this. The ITC relied upon the admission of Norgren's expert at the first hearing, where he said that the only difference was the hinge. He admitted that the SNC old-style connector was generally rectangular. The ITC was entitled to rely upon that. The ITC...
Did he go ahead and correct himself later?
No, he did not. He did not correct himself later. What he did was he looked at it from a different view. And he said, well, if I change the view, I'll see it. It's cross-shaped. The ALJ said, no, you can't escape your admission. And the ALJ specifically held at the first hearing that he had admitted that the old-style connector had a generally rectangular clamp. The ITC did not disturb that decision.
Do you remember what page on the appendix? I'm not trying to quiz you.
Maybe Mr. Fisher can get that for me. It's also in the ID where the ALJ says he tried to get out of this admission, but he just couldn't. So the ITC also, on the basis of its substantial evidence, relied upon what Dr. Plumper said. The ITC, who's the trier of fact here, not the ALJ, said they examined the physical exhibits. They also said that the clamping features in the old style and new style connectors are the same. And the ITC also said that the intervening slope sides determination by the ALJ was contrary to Norgren's infringement and domestic industry arguments. They also said that the Federal Circuit in this case held that generally rectangle related to overall shape and that therefore the old style connector was generally rectangular. And so that has to be reviewed on the substantial evidence standard, and there certainly was substantial evidence based upon they're looking at everything, they're relying upon the admission by Norgren's expert, they're relying upon Dr. Trumper's testimony, and that should be substantial evidence sufficient, so which would justify affirming their decision.
I see my red light is on. Instead, your time is up, but if one of your colleagues finds a number, then we will hear the number. But other than that, your time is up.
Thank you.
Mr. Manti has some rebuttal time.
I think the number you're looking for is A2459. That's the testimony of Mr. Wiskamp that it's cross-shaped.
Thank you.
Even if you assume, and I'm not conceding this, but even if you assume that that old SMC clamp is four-sided and generally rectangular, there's no evidence in the record at all of why a person of ordinary skill in the art would choose that shape for this clamp. Furthermore, there's no evidence from a person really of that time and the time period before the invention of why you would add a pivoting side other than Dr. Trumper just saying it was common sense. Dr. Trumper did not participate in that industry during the critical time. He did not review anything from that critical time or interview anybody who did. Whereas Mr. Wolf was designing connectors and FRL units for two competitors during the critical time and actually got a patent at the very same time as the 392 patent on a different idea. His team of people at both places he worked for, plus the NFPA, the National Fluid Power Association, plus the trade shows, plus the trade magazine, none of them had teachings, suggestions, or motivation to combine these elements or to use either one of them. So if the evidence is that all the elements existed in, say, 1983 when the Yamazaki patent for the old SMC clamp came out, and there was a motivation which the ITC found from the wording in the patent itself, which I submit is not the legal standard. You can't use the patent itself for motivation. There's no evidence of other motivation. But even if that's all true, why didn't the engineers at SMC or any other FRL maker around the world come up with this idea if it was obvious in the 10 years between the 1983 Yamazaki patent and the 1993 392 invention? I know that there's no burden on us to show non-obviousness. In fact, when I did trials, one of the things we used to ask the jurors is, can you prove that you don't speak Chinese? And of course, nobody can prove that because you can't prove a negative. And there's no burden on us. But I nonetheless submit that Mr. Wolf was the perfect witness to prove that the combination of these units, or even the selection of these elements of this patent, was not obvious to a real person of skill in the art before the 1993 patent. All you have in this case is hindsight from a professor, granted a very bright and distinguished person, but basically a hired gun who comes in after the fact, long after the fact, and says, oh, it's obvious, it's common sense, looking at the result. I submit that's not enough to prove obviousness, and I think the real crux of this case beside the shape. The shape is a quick out. If the elements didn't exist in the prior art, then I think it can't be obvious. But I think the entire bulk of the evidence, not just substantial evidence, but basically all of the evidence in this case was that this invention was non-obvious.
Was this the case where you were asserting that Dr. Trumper is not a qualified witness, mechanical engineering professor at MIT?
I'm saying that he did not have the foundational background to tell us what a person of ordinary skill in the art in 1993 in the FRL industry, you know, making these common units, would have thought was obvious. And he did nothing to find out. He could have read the trade magazines from the time. He could have interviewed people who were working on these things at the time. He didn't do any of that. He couldn't even tell me how the FRLs and his very own lab at MIT were connected. And he said he did not review the commercial selection of connectors of FRLs from 1993. He didn't even have them in front of him to know what was out there and what these people were looking at when they were trying to design a new connector. It's just a paucity of evidence. And if a person like this can come in with pure hindsight and establish obviousness, then I think every patent is vulnerable. If there's no further questions.
Mr. Newstead, did you find a page number?
Yes, I do. For the original ID, it's found in the paragraph.
There's just a page number, no more text.
A1667 to A1668.
Okay, thank
you. And there's another page number, and that's in the current ITC decision, and that's filed at A119.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.